when I was coming up, it was very much like, fuck the police, you know, a lot of police brutality rallies, a lot of sort of ways that we absorbed the oppression we were fighting in our bodies without any sort of consciousness. I didn't know that I could be happy. I didn't know that I deserved to be queer in my resistance. So I think for me, pleasure activism has been like, how do I reclaim a space in myself that's inherently like sweet and protected, that gets to feel like my body belongs to me and my body deserves to be pleasured. Like, there's so much anxiety to being bold. So how do I let the sweetness sort of take its place instead of anxiety? Let sweetness be my relationship with my boldness and my dreams.
This is The Secret Lives of Black Women. I'm Sharla.
And I'm Lauren.
And today we're talking pleasure activism.
I have been waiting for this episode since the day we decided to start this show.
What is pleasure activism?
So pleasure activism is, are you ready to just like be so warmed inside by this like thought?
Oh my God.
So it has many facets, but essentially it's the thought of sensual pleasure and happiness can be an act of resistance against oppressive
forces.
That just
gave me chills.
Right? Told you. So it's the thought of, you know, finding pleasure in your life. Like, we're so bogged down. And it's truly, when I think of the show actually is a form of like pleasure activism.
Absolutely, yeah.
Of like, instead of asking people, like, how do you survive? Changing the framework to being like, how do you thrive? How are you finding joy? Because those are ways to combat all the shit. And the philosophy of it is really explained through a series of essays and writings by Adrienne Marie Brown called Pleasure Activism.
Should I admit on air that I have not read this essay or this book?
You should.
I should. I feel like this whole interview is going to be very illuminating to me because I don't know a lot of this stuff. I have not had time to read this thing.
And we have the perfect person here today to help illuminate things for us, which is Janata Petrus. So I was first introduced to Janata Petrus through reading Pleasure Activism and her essay, Black Woman Wildness, A Spell. And
I love it.
In the essay, she talks about, you know, going through a bit of heartbreak and a friend being like, put your pussy on the earth and, like, let it, like, ease you.
I actually did read this essay in preparation for this interview, and I truly started laughing the whole time. Not because I thought it was funny, but because I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
It's just like, what an interesting way to get over some pain.
I read it, and I was like, how can I get to the woods and do this?
I love Black women. I really do.
So, and I mean,
Andy's in the control room, like, I guess, like, raising the roof. Like, that's what she's doing.
So,
because put your pussy on the earth. That's another T-shirt.
Put your pussy on the earth. And she also has, like, an amazing poem called A Prayer for Pussies that sparked a little controversy in Minneapolis. She's also a fantasy book author, performance artist, filmmaker, poet, and self-proclaimed soul sweetener. I love this, soul sweetener. She has a new book out, The Stars and the Blackness Between Them, which is a YA novel about two Black girls who fall in love. And I'm so excited for all of us to just learn from her, learn more about pleasure activism and how we can incorporate it in our lives. And I feel like I'm talking too much and I want to talk to Janata right now. So let's just get to the interview.
Yes, but let's get to the interview.
So you do so many things. You're a pleasure activist. You're a performance artist. You're a filmmaker. You're a poet. You are a writer. And a soul sweetener is one of the first things that you list on your website in defining yourself. And I would just love to know, what does it mean to be a soul sweetener? Sweetener is a word that you use a lot in your writing and your descriptions of yourself. And I would love to just like dive in deeper. How do we get sweet?
Yeah, well, I think for me, sweetness is a thing that like I've always been obsessed with since I've been a child, you know, candies and chocolates. And I think in a lot of ways, it's a soothing thing, right? It's a thing we often use to soothe. And there's this band named Hiatus Coyote.
I love them.
I know, I love them. And there's this one song where she says soul sweetener, like it was a song that I was listening to a lot off of their first album. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, just going through a heavy and negative relationship. And I just felt that, you know, role, that term, that like trajectory, soul sweeping. So I think like as an artist, so much of my healing and grounding in Black diasporic artistry and futurism and cosmologies really is kind of investigating, you know, how we survived, you know, how we not only survived, but made it magical and limitless and unbelievably cosmic. And I, you know, gather spirit from everywhere. And my wife and I were listening to some gospel, some Yolanda Adams.
Oh, you better listen to Yolanda Adams.
Right.
I love
and
her.
Just like started bawling, you know, just because there's something so intelligent and the healingness of gospel as a, you know, pleasure activist, soul sweetener. Like I really try to find, these spaces of cosmic spectacle, beautiful healing and sweetness, because as in our Black reality, or, you know, the way that we're forced to explore and exist in our reality, there's just so much focus on our destruction and our oppression.
Yeah, I love it because it's so tied to the foundation of pleasure activism and bringing like sweetness and joy as an act of resistance into your life. How would you define pleasure activism?
Okay, so I'm like in my late 30s, I'm 38. I grew up in a very kind of militant sort of activist organizing lineage, you know, like when I was coming up, it was very much like, fuck the police, you know, a lot of police brutality rallies, a lot of sort of ways that we absorbed the oppression we were fighting in our bodies without any sort of consciousness. I think in a lot of ways, I didn't know that I could be happy. I didn't know that I deserved to be queer in my resistance in a lot of ways, especially because I was also in lineages of spaces of Black consciousness that didn't have necessarily an inclusion around the way that women and queerness is a source of power and magic. So I think for me, pleasure and activism started to make sense once I started to lean into myself as an artist. So anyways, like the way that I came into artistry, which has been my like mode of activism, was through studying circus, you know, studying aerial arts, which is a circus form that's like acrobatics. And I started studying with a Black queer Jamaican woman, Kate Lee Kalnick, who's super dope, still lives in Brooklyn. I think she lives in Brooklyn. But anyways, I got pulled into doing circus arts. And I think for me, like I was so interested in how could I use circus to tell the complicated stories of Black people, especially with access to this vertical plane that aerial arts gave. It was the weirdest thing. I also think my research in the Black diaspora, you know, the places my parents are from, Trinidad and St. Croix, as well as Cuba and Brazil in particular, where I studied abroad, I saw that so many of the like sort of Black women priestesses within the ancestral, are y'all familiar with like voodoo?
Yeah,
and, like,
I'm from New Orleans. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm Haitian.
She's Haitian, so.
So, very familiar.
Yeah, no, so y'all, you know, understand that I got to see these women, these people who were like within the these realms of priestesshood within their communities. They were just like tenderizers and sweeteners and listened to people. And, you know, that was, this was a subversive lineage of women who, you know, their ancestors had come over and were able to find places of power and give it and hold all of this, you know, memory. Yeah. So I think for me, pleasure activism has been like, how do I reclaim a space in myself that's inherently like sweet and protected, that gets to feel like my body belongs to me and my body deserves to be pleasured?
Yeah. One of the things that I really want to talk to you about, which is not just, you know, the sweetness that we give ourselves, but also wildness. Mm-hmm. And the connotations, which oftentimes seem to be negative when you think of the world, like wild and Blackness and Black womanhood, like automatically my mind is going to a very superficial space of like Scary Spice being deemed Scary Spice. and being deemed the wild one because she's Black. But like in your essay in the Pleasure Activism book, you mention a wildness of going through a heartbreak and going to the earth and like laying your pussy bare on the ground and like connecting to source. And that to me is wild on so many levels. So I'd love for you to like talk deeper about how do you own or reclaim that version of wildness? I feel like I'm a person that's, I'm so scared to be wild.
I think for me, like I'm similar. Like I think like, oh gosh, as a Black girl, I wanted to be a good Black girl. You know, I wanted to be a good Black woman. Our bodies and our existence in our bodies is prescribed to be this thing that's for the pleasure of others, right, and also the comfort of others. And I think for me, like, you know, circus again was this space. Like, I mean, the woman who taught me circus, like I totally had a crush on her. And, you know, she was like this beautiful sort of like, you know, wild woman circus artist who became a circus artist in her 30s, you know, had lived in Spain, you know, in her 20s, and just was this woman who'd given herself permission to live her life.
Mm-hmm.
I so wanted to feel like I could do that. But I also felt like, A, I couldn't, like, I literally wouldn't, you know, succeed. And B, that, like, why would I be able to live a life like that? But like something about like climbing in the air and risking my life, honestly, and learning an acrobatic form in like my late 20s just empowered me around myself in, you know, this whole other way. So, yeah, like I think for me, wildness then became a thing of thinking about nature and the perfection of nature. Nature is wild. Nature is unconquered. Nature moves in its own unfurling and its own sort of rhythm, you know, and it's a rhythm that can't be forced on by anybody. This is like, you know, speaks to a little bit of what my pleasure activism piece was, is like, how do I use nature not only as a source, you know, and as a resource, but also as a muse, you know? It can be my meditation. Like, what is the meditation of, you know, seeing the way snow falls down and it's just so beautiful and limitless and fluffy and abundant? You know, what is that inspiration for me and my Black female body? You know, so I think for me, wildness is, you know, literally like this untamedness and this like limitless curiosity with life.
I feel like Meg Thee Stallion's getting a lot of hype, but like, what about Lil' Kim? She did this before any of these, these women were doing it.
Oh, I would totally give Lil' Kim, Missy Elliott, you know, like think Bessie Smith.
Yes,
you
know?
Yes, absolutely.
I've been so, in my research, so grateful to think of how Black women have always, you know, within blues music, talking about rocking on their...
Because the other reason why I love this book, even though I haven't read much of it, is the fundamental freedom in pleasure. Like, it's fundamental to our freedom. If I can't have pleasure, then am I really free? Janata, I really love what you said about when you started doing circus, that really helped you connect with yourself. This is not the same, but I feel like it's so similar. When I started doing improv, which was this very scary thing for me, but I felt like doing something scary required me to be vulnerable in a way that I had never been before. And I realized that vulnerability was something that I had been cut off from because of the necessity to be perfect as a Black person. You can never look stupid. You can never do something that's too risky. You can never, you always have to like be on guard, essentially. And it required me to like let my guard down. And I definitely think having that kind of experience where I had to like step away from all of these preconditioned ideas of close your legs, look good, don't look too wild, fix your hair, you can't be too dark, get out of the sun. All of those little things that chip away at you your whole life. It's like, finally, I'm doing something that isn't gonna get my family anywhere. You know what I mean? It's not important necessarily, but it was one of the most important things I could have ever done for myself or for my psyche, I think.
It's like this thought of being paralyzed by fear based on this idea of being accepted, right? So I don't even want to say perfectionism. It's like acceptance, and the framework of being accepted sort of has paralyzed me with fear. And I feel like you've done certain things, like even in this essay of like going out in a public space and being like, I'm connecting my visage to earth. And I think that even in, you know, your A Prayer for Pussies poem, like, so you wrote this beautiful poem that was supposed to be a part of a public works exhibition in your hometown of Minneapolis. And they censored, they said that they wouldn't publish it because they wouldn't use the word pussies. And to me, that is an act of like such fearlessness and defiance. How did you find the space or the courage to be fearless and to do what was best for you and your practice?
Well, I think I have become good at figuring out how healing heartbreaks can be generative in important ways.
We're gonna take a quick break. And when we come back, I wanna ask you about the relationship that you had that inspired your essay in Pleasure Activism. And we're back. Janata, what moved you to come out?
Well, I think a couple of things. I've been in this really abusive relationship with a man that I was like, I could have had a V8. So I happen to be, you know, I guess they would call it pansexual. Like, I'm really just attracted to all kinds of people and bodies and stuff like that. And it's really like, you know, like a vibe thing, you know. But I think for me, I always try to force my pleasure and my desire into heterosexual relationships with cis male bodies. And I felt like after that experience, I felt like I'd absorbed so much violence and the person's, you know, hatred and misogyny and this person's homophobia, because, you know, I let them know that I was attracted to women and there were so many ways that was sexualized and undermined. It was a reflection of how I felt about myself, maybe, you know what I mean, about my worth. And I think, like, experiencing the literal violence of this person against my body and my spirit made me choose myself. I was like, this person is willing to, you know, use violence to try to have control over me. Why can't I just choose me and be curious about my authentic self? You know, I don't know if y'all are drug friendly on this show, but like, I had a
lot about drugs. Yeah, weed and shrooms.
So, like, I had this really amazing shroom trip in which it taught me that I was allowing other people to be the captains of my life, you know? And it was very much apparent within an art experience I was having, as well as this romantic experience. I don't know if I'd call it romantic as much as a relationship experience I was having. And I think it forced me to be like, I don't know. It just forced me to be like, what the fuck? Like, this is losing it all. This is like the worst, is that I've allowed this thing to do this to my body. Why can't I just accept that I love women, you know? And then Frank Ocean also had dropped his album at around that time. And I had like this job I hated, was listening to Frank Ocean, was in this stupid ass motherfucking relationship.
Man, music is an important part of you changing your life.
Totally. Oh my gosh, totally. Even if you look in my my book, there's like a playlist in the back.
Okay.
Just because, you know, for me, it's like, yeah, like I do think it's a catalyst to sort of like tenderize and open you to you, you know, something about music. And so I was like, yo, I told my mom and my, like, I shared, my family is Caribbean, my mother's Trinidadian. And she's really always been open-minded, always had gay friends, but always, you know, just meddling ass West Indian mother. So, like, you know, once I came out to her and my sisters, and I just was like kind of in fuck it mode at that point.
And so you come out and the first relationship you have is who? How do you find this person? What is that romance like, especially it's your first same-sex relationship?
It was, and I should say my first one out, because also too, I would be involved with Women on the Low, you know, so I could also speak to that, talk about Secret Lives of Black Women.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was like a thing, like I always had like girls I would make out with or had these, you know, like deep, weird, intense bonds with, but just wasn't out. But once I came out, it was in like my first out relationship. I feel like I did some sort of performance. And because, you know, like I said, I did circus, and this woman like hit me up and asked me for lunch, you know, so we went for lunch. And so the drama as to why this was such a bad relationship is that she was like in between her ex and was like trying to like use me as a raft up out of that shit. And was totally like messed with my emotions. And this other woman was hating me and trying to like fight me. And I have a very strong hood streak. You know what I'm saying?
I love it.
It was just like this dynamic. And yeah, it like broke my heart. And like my homegirl, you know, like I share in the essay, like I'm like or she calls me and I'm like crying and she's like, fuck that bitch. She's like, no, let me tell you what to do. My friend Keegan, she's like, you know, just get you a skirt and just like, you know, go and just sit your coochie on the earth and just like, let it go. And I just, in that moment, I was like, oh shit. Cause I just had been like sitting with it in my chest and in my stomach, you know, when you're heartbroken,
yes.
And it's just like your body, everything is just sort of like numb, but in the most pain as
yes.
well.
Yeah. You know? Dull ache is what I like to call it. Just.
So to be able to be like, wait a minute, like this planet, this earth that has absorbed so much and all of these trees and all of these things that have seen so much, like I'm going to connect myself to that and release and give it to something else, like give it away, you know? yes. The battle is not yours.
Did you feel in that moment of release, could you feel that pain leave your body or start to exercise its way out of your body?
I think it gave me permission to let it go in a way that was both physical and spiritual and soulful. Because I think, you know, when you're going through something, you're just like, well, man, fuck her, man. She wasn't anything anyways. Or why am I shit? How come nobody want? Like, it's just like all of these vacillating things that are, none of them are true. You know, they're just like these sort of just like scrapers and scratchers of the mind and spirit. But to like sit on the earth and just be like, oh, wow, my beautiful, sweet body that's always been a beautiful, sweet body that deserves an earth, that is held by the earth, that's not falling into the center of nothingness because there's an earth under my booty and my feet and my coochie. Mm-hmm. And my coochie is important and my coochie deserves to not feel unloved. It just brought around a shift of a meditation.
We've hit a lot about like spirituality and connection and the nature of knowing yourself. And you mentioned how like heartbreak could be regenerative. I feel like all of these intersect in your book, which I desperately want to read, The Stars and Their Blackness Between Them. So the book is a love story between two Black girls in Trinidad. And I would love for you to talk about what inspired you to write it and how it is in, this is once again me with all the questions because I just want to just like get inside your brain, but how it's an extension of this sense of knowing that you developed in yourself.
Mm. Yeah, I think so much of my art and so much I think of my pleasure activism has been in like going within to my little girl selves and teenage selves and giving them permission and acceptance and affirmation in ways that I couldn't give myself then. I didn't think I was beautiful. I didn't think I was worthy. I didn't think I was anything. I literally didn't think I was anything. So anyway, the book is about two Black girls like you shared. You know, one is from Trinidad and is like, you know, has sort of a pretty religious and kind of anxious or depressed mother and a grandmother who's like a magical, dancing, brilliant being and her bestie. And, you know, long story short, you know, she gets caught with a lover and gets sent to live with her Black American father in Minneapolis, where I'm from. And she befriends this girl, Mabel, who's a tomboy, you know, is really close to her father, who, you know, has this beautiful garden called Black Eden. And, you know, they sort of, you know, just become friends, these two girls, and, you know, start to navigate a lot with each other. Some of which includes, just coming into your own sexuality, coming into different healing practices. It's a very immense book. You know, there's a character in there who's on death row, who's an astrologer, who the girls start a connection with. There's a lot of ways that I was curious around reclaiming spaces of healing and cosmology and limitlessness within a Black queer girl sort of narrative and protagonism. For me, as a Black kid, I used to love to just read books. I love the spicy, sexy parts, but I never really saw myself in any of that, except for like Seeley and Suge, my little tattoos from The Color Purple, Seeley and Suge, you know, like I think that was the space I saw, like, okay, here are these two Black women, you know, finding love within each other. But, you know, there's not a ton out there. And certainly not in a way that sort of edifies how important it is to your body as a Black teenage girl to feel special and to feel beautiful and to get to be a thing that's complicated, but not complicated to society in the ways that, like, growing up, it was like, oh, teen pregnancy and these girls is fast and da 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 da. It's, you know, like, no, like, we're so beautiful and we get to be curious about ourselves, you know, and we get to be curious about each other. So for me, that's where the book, you know, sort of blossomed.
We would love if you could share a little bit from the book.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, there's two pieces I want to share from the book. Okay, I don't know which one to choose. I never know which one to choose.
Do both.
Okay, thank you. I just needed that permission, friend. This is the prologue. We outsmarted oblivion 7 times in a row and made it look like jazz with no chains, like shaking our butt with no shame. We moonwalked past the ghosts of this living world. We decided to free ourselves out of the estranged strangling of this reality. We swan dived and centered in our magic. We found an eternal life that couldn't understand prisons or any other enslavement. We was not at the frequency that could catch or contort our souls. It wasn't easy, but destiny is destiny. Our bodies, levitated by the stardust of the ancestors in our bones. Our ecstasy got divined in limitless existence. This is how we figured it out. Heard on an echo of a breeze in a playground somewhere in the future where kids is feeling free and they double dutching, singing, gardening, and twerking in the radiance of their ancestors' laughter.
So beautiful.
Oh, so good.
And then this is the very last paragraph. So this is the very beginning of the book and the last of the book. Loving on you is prayer, like the prayers of bees is honey. We loved on each other like we always been. My fingers caressed your naps in this life. It placed oils and we was infinite and knew how to love. On the scalp, along the cornrow, and on each other. These coilings was anointed like a real love. We was a cosmic conversation before I even met you in this life.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my
poetry.
God. I love it. I cannot wait to read it. I think that it's so essential. I feel like we ingest a lot of queer experiences of like young men, but not so much of young women and the tenderness that they can experience with each other. So I'm so excited to read this book. And I want to, before we go, I've like Twitter stalked you. And I'm just so into your affirmation for 2020. And I'm going to read it and I would love for you just to chat a little bit about it. But you say, sweetness is here, kissing all the things in me broken or confused. And that's your affirmation for this year. And I think that that is such a beautiful lesson in how are you letting sweetness kiss those things in you, and how are you taking that with you as your journey or your North Star for this year, this new decade?
Yeah, I think that It's just to sort of help me be bold. There's always going to be things that I don't understand or don't know about life. And I really, truly believe that there's things that are invisible to me that are softening and sweetening my path and protecting me and have created space for me. And I have always wanted to be bold and just like feel like anything could be mine, you know? And I think for me, as we've talked about, you know, like sweetness has always given me care and permission. So I think that for me, I'm really allowing that to make me bold. And also know that it should be enjoyable. Like, you know, I have listened to y'all podcasts and stopped you in that way. Mm-hmm. And I see that, you know, y'all are very ambitious and y'all take risks and y'all are really opening spaces for the voices of Black women. That's unique, you know, and it's bold.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I think it's a thing that we're constantly being like, like there's so much anxiety to being bold. So how do I let the sweetness sort of take its place instead of anxiety? Let sweetness be my relationship with my boldness and my dreams rather than feeling like this sort of inherent fear of failure or, you know, a risk that turns out bad and destroys my life, you know? Like, oh no.
Well, this feels like the perfect place to wrap up. We like to end every episode by asking our guests, what is your secret?
I'll say curiosity.
Oh, I love that.
I mean, I ended up studying circus because this woman on the train who was looking fine, I guess I was talking to her and just talking to me, gave me her business card and said, this is what I do. And it was her wrapped up in yellow silks as a circus artist. Mm-hmm. And I started studying circus with her and it changed my life. I moved to New York. I ended up in New York because I was curious about a job with Alvin Ailey's youth camp that someone, you know, said I should apply for. And I just feel like curiosity has always, you know, sort of helped me sidestep any fears and anxiety I have. Like, I just need to know, like, I can't know what my life would be like without these experiences I just needed to find out about. So
curiosity is my word of one of my words of 2020. So this is amazing. But I also love in this story, I feel like when you are curious and open, spirit comes to you and spirit came to you in the form of that lady being like, you need this now. And that's like not coincidence. Oh my gosh. This has been
great.
Such a true joy for me. And we're going to like, we always do a reflection after, but I really just want to say with you here that like, thank you. I appreciate your time, your presence, your energy. And this is like one of those moments that I've truly felt this was spirit communicating to me and reflecting some stuff back to me through your words and your being. And I'm very grateful for that. So I want to say thank you.
I love y'all.
Do you want to tell people where they can get your book?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Whitney Houston is a big part of my book. And I feel like I can't have an interview about my book and not speak to how important an ancestor she was. And I think her pleasure and or lack thereof or repression of pleasure is such an important thing for us to care about as Black women who, you know, grew up seeing her as an icon. And I talk a lot about her queerness in my book. But I think it's for young adults of all kinds, of all ages, of all life paths. Yes, it's a young adult book, but also see it as a sort of spiritual and, you know, healing sort of funny, weird book, too. So The Stars and the Blackness Between Them, you can get it anywhere. Lovely books are sold as well as online. Independent bookstores are my faves. Get it for you and a young person inside of all of the young people you know.
I love it. Thank you.
Thank you so much,
Janata. So much. All right. Woof. That was like...
Lauren, I felt like I was not in the room the whole time you were talking to this lady. You were so obsessed.
I mean, it was just so soul affirming. I don't know. I'm always so inspired when I see like Black women and Black women artists in particular fully coming into themselves and like owning themselves and their experiences with like a sense of a fullness and being open about just like the journey that it's been, because I feel like that's where I'm at and I'm really excited for what's to come in my life. And it's just really, yeah, I feel very inspired.
I see that. I love whenever guests like this come on, because I always feel like the people who live their lives the most unapologetically are showing most gratitude for life.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's easy, you know, like definitely the journey that she's been on has been, of course, difficult, you know, but I, and not saying that people that don't, that aren't out, aren't being showing gratitude for life, but definitely it's always very inspiring and like affirming to watch someone be like, I could have had a V8 instead of staying in some trash relationship. I also loved what she said about, she kept saying the word deserve, which I thought was really telling of Black oppression, because it's something that you internalize, or at least I internalize, like whenever I've been told to close my legs or like not to, it's like very young, like 8 years old, people telling you to close your legs or whatever, because I developed very quickly. But I just feel like there is that sense when you're kind of like oppressed in those small everyday ways of internalizing that and feeling like you don't deserve good things, that you don't have value, that your value is constantly being watched and it's not inherent, you know? So I'm just like, this is a lady that I feel like who's gone on a journey of creating her own inherent value, which I think is so beautiful and amazing. And I'm like, I'm glad we got to talk to her.
I'm glad. And it's just so, it's so inspiring. Like just now I had this thought of like, I strive to be like a guest on this show, to be so full and incomplete in my wholeness that it reflects back and it inspires others, which I feel like most of the people who've walked in this room have been, or have joined us on Skype, are there. And it's something that I feel like I am finally clear eyes, like on the road to, which brings me to like, so my word of the week, which I'm totally gonna like put on a post-it on my mirror, is when she said, be curious about my authentic self. And I think that there's something to be said, you know, curiosity is like one of my words for 2020. Each year, my best friend is like, what are your words for the year? So it's like a habit that we've been in for like the last 10 years of being like, these are my words. And curiosity is one of my words for this year. And it's just to not be just be curious about the world around me, but to be curious about myself. Like, I feel so often we have these stories that we tell ourselves about who we are and where we've been and where we're going, that we lose a curiosity of like surprising ourselves. And how can I like surprise myself in my like undoing, like when, as I'm undoing all of these things that people have told me who I am and who I can be, that I've told myself who I am and who I can be, as I fight against that to sort of transform and rise up, how can I be curious and constantly being in, not interrogation, but in conversation with myself as we grow to allow that growth to happen? So be curious about my authentic self is my word of the week. What's yours?
My word of the week is deserve. I love that, what she said about... she now feels like she deserves to be happy and to have pleasure and to have joy. And I think we all do. And I think that we don't have to wait for anybody to give us permission. I think we can give it to ourselves to have inherent value. So that's my word of the week. That's it for today's episode.
Thank you, guys. I feel like this episode, at least for me, was like very internal and cerebral. So I really hope that you all took something out of it as well. And as always, thank you for listening and just being a part of this journey with us, because I feel like through this podcast we get to have these conversations that have like led to this deeper exploration of like self in the world. And I'm so thankful for all of you who listen to give us this opportunity to do that. And, you know, check back in with you next week when we'll we do some more.
See you next week, guys. Thank you.
Bye. Bye. The Secret Lives of Black Women is a production of Stitcher. We're your hosts, Charlotte Lyerston and Lauren Domino. Our producer is Taylor Hosking. Our senior producer is Stephanie Karayuki. Our editor is Gianna Palmer. Special thanks to our chief content officer, Chris Bannon, and our recording and mixing engineer, Andy Kirstens. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the SLBW. See you later.